Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is troubleshooting issues in using SQL and ODBC on WebSphere Data Power SLA appliances. And this is a part three of a three-part presentation. Today's presenters are Moses Alote Pepo, Carol Miller, Dominic Mikel, Andrew Schimmering, Alfred Williamson, Max Chen, and Paul McGanney. Moses, Carol, Dominic, Andrew, Alfred, Max, and Paul are the part of a team that provides Level 2 customer support for the IBM Data Power appliances. Their primary goal is to quickly resolve customer questions and issues that the customer experience with the product and to collaborate with the Level 3 engineering team in delivering the ultimate in customer satisfaction. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to our speakers for today.
Thank you, Joseph. This is Paul McGanney, and good morning, everyone. Before I begin again, I would just like to acknowledge my teammates for their continued support during these presentations. Moses, Carol, Trey, Andrew, Dominic, and Max really appreciate the support. So let's move on to the next slide, Joseph. So this is a third presentation of a three-part series. So the agenda, what we're going to cover this morning is we're going to just do a brief introduction. We're going to look at a summary of part one of the three-part series presentation. Then we'll quickly look at summary of part two of the three-part series presentation. And then we'll dive into the troubleshooting aspect. We'll look at troubleshooting connectivity issues, troubleshooting processing policy issues. Then we'll also get into SQL endpoint foundations, fundamentals, if you will. We'll look at the must-gather documents that will be needed. We'll also touch upon, after exhausting all our resources, what do we do next. We'll then have a final summary. We'll refer to additional WebSphere product resources, and then we'll have a question and answer period. So, Joseph, if you could please move to slide number three. So this is part three of a three-part series presentation, and you can see by the URLs indicated below that where part one and part two can be found, and I urge you to, at your convenience, to check those out. Part three is going to focus on troubleshooting and problem determination and working with specifically the Data Power SQL ODBC component. Joseph, can we please move to slide four? So the SQL data source object, and this is just a summary of part one, it is a license feature. It requires the SQL ODBC license, and it's not available on all the appliances. It's only available on the Data Power appliances, the XI50, XB60, and the XM70. And basically what the SQL Data Source Component object allows us to do is provide the configuration to establish a direct connection to a database instance on a remote data server. And also with the SQL Data Source object, we have an option for specifying configuration parameters that can be defined. Can we please move to slide number five? As I said, just to continue with the summary of part one, the SQL Data Source object we can connect to a remote database server. And what are those supported database servers? Well, as of the 3.8.1 firmware, we support DB2, all versions up to 9.5, Microsoft SQL Server also supported versions up to 2008, and then we also support Oracle and Sybase. Oracle all supported versions up to 11G, and Sybase all supported versions up to 15. Joseph, can we please move to slide six? In the summary of part one, we also talked about how we can dynamically perform database operations with the SQL data source component, such as select, insert, update, delete, X queries and stored procedures. We also talked about that the SQL object can be used via a SQL action in a processing policy rule, and that it can also be used in a custom style sheet. And we can use the Data Power DPSQL execute extension function or the DPSQL execute extension element. And again, those would be in a custom style sheet. Joseph, if we can please move to slide 7. In part 2, what we did is we talked about the evolution of the SQL data source object, and then we also talked about that it can be used in the following services. It can be used in a multi-protocol gateway, a web service proxy, an XML firewall, or a web application firewall. We discussed that it cannot be used in the front end or back end of the service, and it can be used in processing rules, whether it be a request rule, a response rule, or an error rule. And the location of the SQL data source object is, if you go to the web GUI, it'll be under network, and you'll see SQL data source. Joseph, if we can please move to slide number 8. In the summary of part 2, we then drilled in detail on the SQL data source object configuration. We looked at the SQL action that can be used in a processing rule in detail, and then we looked at examples of the DPSQL execute extension function and the SQL execute extension element and the parameters that would have to be specified for each of those. Slide 9. Lastly, we talked about in the summary of part 2 that there are some limitations, and the two limitations are really a lack of strong security, SSL for the SQL ODBC database component, and limited database vendor support. However, with the lack of strong security, we should say that you could employ a SQL injection filter or encrypt the data with an encrypt action on a processing rule. You can also wrap the database connection in a SQL proxy profile to achieve an encrypted database connection. So there are some limitations, but there are some workarounds. Joseph, if we can please move to slide number 10. Lastly, in the summary of part 2, we then talked about use cases. And if you go out to that URL for the part 2, you'll see real good detail on these following use cases. One with transaction data storage retrieval. There's another one with authentication, authorization, then logging, auditing, batch processing, and binary processing. So I urge you all, if you haven't looked at part 2, the presentation of the use cases, to please feel free to check that out at your convenience. And Joseph, if we can please move to slide 11. Okay, now we're ready to begin and dive into the troubleshooting aspect of SQL ODBC. So we're going to take a look at data source connectivity issues. We're going to look at issues from the processing policy perspective. We're then going to follow that up with SQL endpoint foundations. We're going to talk about the must-gather documents. And we're going to then close with that, after exhausting all your resources, what do you do as a customer next? So why don't we move to slide 12, Joseph? And I would like to hand the presentation over to my colleague, Moses Alote-Papo.
Thank you, Paul. So now we'll talk about some of the connectivity issues that you may encounter and also the different approaches that you can use to troubleshoot that. So we'll start by looking at some of the initial things you have to check for, maybe that can help you determine why the connection issues are happening. Then some tools that you can use to troubleshoot, and also the case where you have multiple instances of the database running on the same server, what can you do to actually resolve that? Then when you have login failures, and after that we'll take a look at some data that you can capture to analyze the troubleshooting issues. Slide 13, please. So just as Paul mentioned in the summary, for you to be able to use the ODBC feature, you need to have the license. So if you've created the data source object and it's not coming up, the first thing that you may want to check is to just make sure that you have the ODBC license. And you can do this from the CLI by executing the show license command, or from the web GUI by going through the control panel status and then the device features. And from the screenshots on the slide, you actually see the SQL ODBC feature slide 14, please. Just because you have the license or the ODBC license doesn't mean that you have the feature running on the box. So you also want to make sure that the firmware that you're installing has the ODBC library. One of the ways to check that from the CLI would be to use the show library command, or from the web GUI, you want to do the control from the control panel status and then library information. So if you have the library information, then you'll be able to utilize the feature on the box. Slide number 15, please. Okay, so you've checked and you've made sure that you have your license and the library installed, but you're still having these issues. And another thing that you want to look at is see if you have any firewall rule that may be blocking the connection from data pod to the database server. So you want to check if there are any authentication requirement that a data pod device needs to authenticate against the firewall. And if the firewall is allowing the IP address, meaning that the IP address that data pod is trying to use to connect, and if the port that data pod is trying to connect to, if that port is also open. So you may want to check the firewall rules just to make sure that that is not also a contributing factor to the connectivity issue that you're having. Slide number 16, please. Okay. So you've made sure the firewall rules are not playing a part here. And now you want to, next thing you want to try to do is to make sure that you can connect from another device on the same subnet to the database server, just to see if maybe there could be some routing issues or any type of issues at the network level. Then once you confirm that, you can also make sure that the server that you're trying to connect to is actually listening on that configured port. Also, you want to see if the server has been configured with SSL, and maybe that is why the connection is not being established. If that's the case, you may want to add the SSL proxy profile to the default XML manager, default user agent, if it's needed. And then the next thing would be to make sure that you're using the correct user credentials, because in some cases you have different environments and maybe the user credentials needed may vary based on the environment. So if you're trying to connect to a database in the test environment, you know, make sure that like you're using the correct credentials to access that. Slide number 17, please. Okay. So another thing that could also happen is in some cases, like the domain can get disabled by the database by the data power admin. So you want to make sure that the domain is still, so when the domain is disabled, all the objects in the domain will also go down. And if you just go straight to your domain and you just go under network and you choose your data source object and try to configure that, it may show us down and you may wonder what could be happening. So that can be another thing for you to check just to see if at the very least your domain is still enabled. Then you also want to check on the database server. It could have the configuration option to allow remote access. So you want to make sure that that has been enabled on the database side and it's not just allowing local connections. And also the device that the database is running on, you want to make sure that there are no access control restrictions, meaning that maybe that also has some internal firewall or some, you know, IP address blockage on that device. So you want to make sure that you also confirm that. But hopefully, if that's the case, when you use another device on the same subnet as data power, you may run into the same issue. Then if this issue is still happening, you may want to try, instead of using the host name of the database server, you may want to use the IP address just to see if maybe there's an issue with resolving the host name, or if it's just that data power is just unable to reach the database period. So if the IP address works instead of the host name, then you can check your DNS configuration just to make sure that, you know, data pipe is able to reach or to resolve the host name of the database. Slide number 18, please. Okay, so now we'll take a look at some of the tools that you can use on the data pod device. We have the ability to ping other devices. So from the CLI, you can use the ping command. Or from the WebGuru, you can go through the control panel and troubleshooting page. You see the ping box for you to be able to enter, like, the host. So if you're trying to see if you can reach the box based on the host name versus the IP, you can do the ping test accordingly. So you ping, you know, based on the host name and see if you're able to reach, and then you can try also based on the IP. Slide number 19, please. Okay, so the ping test seemed to work. Now you want to also check and see if data pipe is able to reach the port. So another tool that you can use will be the TCP connection. You can perform that test either from the CLI or from the web GUI. From the CLI, once again, you can execute the test space TCP-connection. Then you can include the host name or IP and then the port number. Then you can do the same from the web GUI on the same troubleshooting page. So you can put in the host name. Hopefully, by doing the ping, you know if you can reach the box by the host name or the IP, and then you can use the appropriate host value if it's the IP or the host name, and then you can include the port. So that can also help you determine if you're able to reach the database server or not. Slide number 20, please. Okay. So now there's a case where you have multiple instances running on the same server. So you've created one instance for your test. You've created another instance of the database for, let's say, development. And on data part, you want to connect to your development data, you know, database, but you're still having issues. You've confirmed that the IP and port or the host name and port, you're able to actually reach the database server. So one of the things that you want to do is to just check on the server side, check the logs to see which instance data pod is actually trying to connect to. And in most cases, it could be that both instances are, or the multiple instances are running on the same IP and port. So if that seems to be the case, data pod may be connecting to, let's say, like the first instance based on the way the configuration was done on the server side. And that could be the reason why it's failing to log in correctly. So one approach to take in this case is to just ensure that if you have multiple instances, you want to set them up to listen on different ports. So in that case, if you're connecting to the development instance, you know the actual port that database is listening on, you'll be able to connect. And also that will allow you to use the right credentials to access that specific instance. So that, you know, those are some of the issues that you may encounter with the multiple instances running. Slide number 21, please. Okay. So you've been able to confirm everything, but you're still getting some login failures. You know, taking a case where you want to log in using Windows-based user account because, let's say, you're using Microsoft SQL Server, and that supports that. So one of the things that you want to do is to ensure that you set up the server to allow this authentication mode, right, which will be the Windows-based authentication mode. You want to make sure that has been enabled. And then also you want to check to make sure that you can use the same credentials in the same format if it's based on the format of the domain name slash the username. Then you want to make sure that from another client, you want to check to make sure that you can use the same credentials to connect to this, you know, data source. this database instance. And also, you want to make sure that since the Windows base could be restricted based on domain, you want to make sure that the data power device is in the same domain as this database. So if you've done all of those checks, you want to go back and check the server logs, which would be the, if you're using Microsoft SQL in this case, then you want to check those server logs to see exactly why the login is still failing. Slide number 22, please. Okay. So we've talked briefly about some of the connectivity issues that you may encounter and how to troubleshoot some of them. Now, all in all, what data is very useful to analyze? So one of the things that you want to do is to check the data power system logs and just go through and see what type of failures are being reported. Then you can also take a packet capture, right, to see if the connection has been established, is this being closed before the whole conversation is done, and in this case, if it's being closed, who is closing it, and why is the connection being closed? Is it being closed because the client, the server has been configured to, you know, perform, to actually authenticate client or to require SSL, and the client is not connecting over SSL, so the server is closing the connection. Is this being closed? Hopefully, by taking a packet capture, you may also be able to see if, for instance, the firewall is blocking the connections coming from data power, you know, to the database. And also, you may want to check the database server logs, you know, because that can also give you a very good idea as to why the connection attempt is still failing. So, you know, these are some very good, you know, data to analyze. Slide number 23, please. Okay, so now, assuming you've been able to get your data source object up, you've been able to set up your configuration, and now everything seems to be looking okay. You try to process some requests, and you're having some issues. So that is what we'll be talking about next, and I'll hand over back to Paul for him to take us through some of the troubleshooting steps.
Thank you very much, Moses, and thank you for that excellent talk on the connectivity issues. So as Moses talked about the connectivity issues, we're just going to touch upon some issues that we could see in the processing policy perspective. So types of issues are, at a high level, out of memory, the handling of special characters, for example, like Spanish characters, like the accents and the tildes, and then we're going to also touch upon the user agent timeout. Out of memory, we're going to just explore what do we do if the request message is too large or the response message is too large or there's a substantial client load. So, Joseph, can you please move to slide 24? So, mitigation strategies for out of memory. What do we do when the request message is too large? Well, what we can do is we can go into the XML manager for the particular service, again, whether it's a XML firewall or a web service proxy or a multi-protocol gateway. And we can look at the XML manager configuration. Joseph, if you can please move to slide 25. And what we want to pay special attention to here is the XML byte scanned on this screenshot. If the request message is very large, we want to make sure that we can accommodate for such a request. Slide number 26. Okay, now the mitigation strategies for out of memory. What happens if the response message is too large? And what we can do in this case is we can address that with the SQL ODBC object. So, Joseph, if we please move to slide 27, you'll see in the SQL data source object configuration screen here, a web page. I know this is kind of small, but there's a radio button that you can set to on for limit return data. And then underneath there, another field displays that says return data size limit. And you can specify a number to accommodate such a large response. Slide number 28. again, mitigation strategies for out of memory. What happens if we have a substantial client load? For example, let's say we have several concurrent requests of 1 gigabyte coming into the appliance. What we can do is we can address this with a slim policy object on a slim action on a processing rule to do either shaping or throttling of that client load. So if we can please move to slide number 29. Slide number 29 just shows the slim policy object. And if we move to slide 30 shows that we have a slim action within the processing policy rule. And if you go to slide 31, you'll see that we can reference the slim object in this slim action. And if we could please move to slide 32. Now that we've talked about the out-of-memory, what do we do in the case of handling of special characters? And as I mentioned previously, for example, like Spanish characters are not displaying correctly when you're viewing the contents of the database with like an ODBC tool. Well, what we can do is we can address this with the SQL ODBC object. And there was a tech note written on handling of special characters, and if you look at that URL below, that'll point to the solution that we recommend, that we employ, that resolves this. And if you move to slide number 33, this is the SQL Data Source Object Configuration page, and if you see there's a tab there for data source configuration parameters, and I know it's kind of hard to read, but there's a name and a value pair that you would be using to handle special Spanish characters, such as with a tilde or an accent. And if we can move to slide 34. And what do we do? Mitigation strategies for the user agent timeout. And again, we address this with the user agent. Now, the user agent timeout basically specifies the amount of idle time on an established connection before the connection is aborted. And if we move to slide number 35, we can see that we have the user agent, and the user agent will be part of the XML manager. And we can, right here, increase the timeout. As you see, right now it's 5 minutes, which is kind of substantial, but we can decrease or increase that according to our specific needs. And if we can please move to slide 36. Now, what is useful data for analysis when you're working with a processing policy and working with request and response and error rules? Well, first thing you can use is the multi-step probe. The probe allows you to see the input and output from each subsequent action on a processing rule. We can also look at the data power system logs to see what types of error messages are being thrown. Also, what can be helpful is the database server logs. And if need be, we can always revert to a packet capture to see the data that is perhaps going out of the box. And if we can please move to slide 37. Slide 37, we're going to talk about SQL foundations, and I'm going to turn the presentation over to my colleague, Carol Miller, to finish up on this.
Thank you, Paul. We felt that it might be useful to everyone to know the high-level actions of what's happening when a data source gets used. It might help you think about, you know, what's what's going on with your database transaction. So we've got some description here of what's going on in the box. First, each SQL data source opens an SQL endpoint when it's used, which the endpoint maintains a dynamic pool of connections to the database. These connections are created as needed, and there is a limit on the data source object that specifies the number of connections per data source. These connections get periodically cleaned up if they're unused for a given amount of time. And I believe that given amount of time is also listed on the data source object. These connection creation and cleanup activities should be transparent to you and shouldn't cause any serious interruption. But sometimes it helps just to know that that's what's happening under the covers. Can I have slide 38, please? the SQL data source object can be in one of three states, up, pending, or down. When you view the data source object in the web GUI, that state will display at the top of the page. There are error conditions that will cause the SQL endpoint to restart. And when it restarts, all of its worker connections, it's the connections that were created at the time it was created, all of those get restarted. And that's one thing that puts the data source object in a pending state. These error conditions can include network connection interruption to the database, or the maximum manageable load has been exceeded, or the database server refuses a connection from the endpoint, possibly due to excessive load. Slide 39, please. It's recommended when you're using SQL endpoints and connections that it's a good idea to have external health checks, because the SQL endpoint is not notified of network connection issues at the time they occur. The problem only gets detected when a new SQL transaction is attempted, and if it fails due to a network connection issue, then that's when the SQL endpoint finds out that there's been a problem. An external health check could detect a problem earlier, which would enable a switch to an alternate data source or a fix to the connection before real transactions fail. And there's a tech note called Health Checking the IBM WebSphere Data Power SOA Appliance and its services. And that tech note is found at the URL. So that's a good thing to check on if you're depending on your SQL connections to enable you to check their health, other than just waiting for them to succeed or fail. Can I have slide 40, please? Another thing that can cause your SQL data source to go pending is excessive load. So customers always want to know, well, what's excessive load? Unfortunately, it's not a hard number. It varies a lot depending on your environment. All we can say is that all systems have a breaking point, and when the data source goes pending, you've passed that point. So testing in your environment is really key. But we do want to point out that SQL ODBC component improvements, both in throughput and in error handling, were added to the 3.8.1 release. We always have ongoing effort to improve the product, but specifically in 3.8.1, there was a lot of SQL ODBC improvement. Slide 41, please. On the subject of ODBC must gathers, these are tech notes that describe what we would like you to supply to us if you're having a particular kind of problem. And for 3.8.1, there's a new must-gather document for ODBC issues. The URL for it is there at the top of this slide. And it points out that in 3.8.1, debug-level logging is much more detailed on the ODBC track. Debug logging also has a big impact on performance in 3.8.1, so this must-gather is a warning as well as an opportunity. You don't want to have debug logging running all the time on an ODBC box if your box is at 3.8.1 or above. Also, in 3.8.1, tracing can be added. If you're on the ODBC data source object, there is a data source configuration parameters tab, the same place where you set a name value pair for the Spanish character issue. In this case, you can start tracing by setting the name field to trace file and then set the value field to a file URL someplace where your tracing will be sent. Can I have slide 42, please? The versions of Data Power before 3.8.1 have a simpler must-gather tech note that provides less data and is also less intrusive on the box. There's the must-gather URL for that one. And in both cases, be aware that we may need data from Data Power and from the database server or from the network as well to get a complete picture. And as Moses and Paul both mentioned, packet captures are often needed. Slide 43, please. What to do next? If your resources are exhausted, you've done these troubleshooting suggestions that we've put into this presentation, then it's time to contact support. At that time, you should send us the MustGather output that you've put together, because sometimes troubleshooting methods don't yield a clear result. Our additional resources include the development engineers, and sometimes it's appropriate to create a special instrumented or debug build. So when it's warranted, debug builds can generate information files which capture additional data from your box if you can recreate the error. And that gives us more information that's not available in these above troubleshooting steps. Slide 44, please. So we're reaching the end. This presentation is part three of a three-part technical exchange. And in it, we did a quick review of parts one and two of our previous presentations. We talked about troubleshooting connectivity issues for ODBC and troubleshooting processing policy issues as well. Then we described some SQL endpoint foundations, how the system works, and our MustGather documents, and then what to do if your troubleshooting efforts don't succeed. Can I have slide 45, please? This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Specifically, visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts, like the one you attended today, and access previously recorded presentations. The next link, DeveloperWorks, offers in-depth technical information. Visit websphereusergroup.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And finally, the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. And now I want to turn the presentation back to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Moses, Carol, and Paul for a wonderful presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And we have no further questions.
Thank you, Jackie. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation.